Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
To our new listeners, welcome. To our old listeners, welcome back. Another episode of Magical Education awaits you, but first, we would like to say a few words.
Nitwit, blubber, oddment, tweak. Podcast 9¾'s topic of the week is Draco a werewolf?
Hello, listeners. I'm Rhea, and this week I'm arguing Draco is a werewolf.
And I'm Jam, and this week I'm arguing that Draco is not a werewolf.
Okay, before we get into the topic of today, first we're just going to do a little review of the new Portkey Games, Hogwarts Mystery.
Yeah, so this is exciting. I've been playing this game for like over 2 months now because I got it when it was like still in its first version in beta. Yeah. So I've seen how it's sort of evolved over the past two months, which has been quite interesting to watch.
Yeah, it was really cool. The beta got released in Australia, maybe just Australia, but I just know that it was released in Australia, earlier than the actual game went out. So it's a mobile app it's like a role-playing game. So you get to create a character and you attend Hogwarts and you have to like solve a mystery over your presumably 7 years in attendance at Hogwarts. Got anything else to say about like how the game works, the game mechanics?
No, not really. That's basically the gist of it. It's sort of like a choose your own adventure thing, except you only have limited options. You can't like enter in your own options when it comes to dialogue or choice making. It's got to be one of three choices usually. So that can be a bit limiting at times, but you know, it's a mobile game. I'm not expecting.
Okay. Yes, we've both been playing for a while. We're just going to talk about like our thoughts about it, what we like, what we don't like. We're not really going to be spoiling the story or anything because we're both pretty early on in the story. So you can listen to this and not have the game wrecked for you. But if you don't want to hear anything about the game at all, just skip ahead, like, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. And then we'll get into the proper episode.
I think some of the things that I like about the game is that you can choose your own house. That's great. I would have hated to have like gone through all of that effort and then get to the point where you're sorted and you get sorted into a house that you don't want to be in. And it's like, you have to maybe try and restart the game, but you can't do that. So that would be frustrating.
Yeah.
Having said that, because of course both you and I chose to go to Slytherin House, there are some things about the game that just don't quite make sense if you're playing as a Slytherin, at least especially so in the first version of the game. The second version is doing a bit better, but it's definitely clear in a lot of parts that the game was designed for you to be playing as a Gryffindor character rather than a Slytherin character. like, everyone keeps describing you as being so brave all the time, and it's like, whatever. It's like, even if you just do something intelligent or if you just do something that's empathetic, they're like, oh, you're always so brave. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's constantly, you know, you're the bravest person in our year. You're the best at magic. You're so great and amazing. I'm like, please leave me alone. just let me fade into the shadows. I don't want this.
Yeah, I mean, I get that that's part of the game because you're playing is like, I guess you're playing as the Mary Sue, that's like the saver of the year or whatever. But anyway, and there are certain things that like are part of the plot line. So like this is introduced pretty early on, so it's not much of a spoiler, but Marula Snide, who I think you have a lot to talk about. Marula Snide is like the
bully.
Yeah, she's the original Slytherin bitch. And so it doesn't quite make sense in terms of like if both of you are being punished for something that you've done, you'll lose house points, but then she won't receive any punishment. And it's like, she's in the same house as me. She should be losing house points as well, or getting detention or whatever. And it's just like a bit odd.
Yeah, things will happen where, like, you'll get in an argument during potions class and Snape will come up and be like, hey, Rhea, 5 points from Slytherin. And, like, why are you doing this? This makes no sense. And then your prefect will come over and be like, you lost Slytherin house points by fighting with Marula. And I'm like, Slytherin? Marula's in Slytherin. What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense when you're in the same house as the person who's bullying you and she's not getting, like, any sort of consequences. Yeah, she's getting no consequences odd. For her actions. It only makes sense if you, the player, are in Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, or Ravenclaw, and she's in Slytherin, because then you would assume she is receiving consequences, but they just don't affect you.
Yeah.
Oh,
another thing I'll say about... because I think that was a lot of the critique that they were getting from the first version of the game. So the updates have made it clear that they're going to be introducing Slytherin allies in the future. And, like, there's a new part of the update where you can see the relationships that you formed. So it's got relationships with, like, fucking Rowan and Ben and Penny and all that sort of shit. And then, like, it has relationships with people that you haven't met yet, which I assume you'll meet later in the plot. And one of them is this Slytherin boy called Barnaby. So I think he's going to be like the Slytherin companion that you make in the future. So that's all right. I am noticing a significant lack of Ravenclaw companions. Literally, I can't name one character right now that is a Ravenclaw that I've interacted with so far. I mean, I'm like at the end of my second year and I haven't talked to a single Ravenclaw, which is funny.
It's a bit weird because the character that you end up as BFFs with, I'm just going to say a little bit about the plot. So basically the game begins in Diagon Alley. You meet a person there whose name is Rowan, and we're not sure, but we think Rowan's like gender fluid. So depending on if you play as a witch or a wizard, the two genders, Rowan will either be a male or female so they can partner up with you. So you meet this person, Rowan, and they're like, I'm a desperate loser and everyone hates me. And you're like, okay. And then they just cling onto you forever and you cannot get rid of them. I'm not a fan of Rowan.
Oh, she's a limpet. She's such a nerd. I was okay with her at the beginning, but she's so clingy. I just don't want to be around her.
She's very, very, very smart, very bookish, very introverted. And it really seems like she would fit in well with Ravenclaw. Like, she never wants to do anything dangerous. And she's always like, I just want to be the one who's researching. But she's in the house that you choose. So no matter which house you end up in, she's your housemate. And it's like, you're just not a Slytherin. You just chose this house because I was in it and you can't get rid of me.
And I have confirmation of this because one of my friends, who's a Hufflepuff, I've set her up with this game too and was watching her play the first bit of it. And Rowan, yes, does end up in Hufflepuff with you. And there are some slight differences into the way people interact with you when you're in Hufflepuff. Like Marilla Snide doesn't say, oh, you're such a disgrace to Slytherin when she first meets you. She says, no wonder you're a Hufflepuff when she first meets you, which is a bit rough. So I wonder like what the variations of that are if you're Gryffindor or Slytherin. But yeah. But the Hufflepuff common room looks really pretty. I also like in the new update, they've like changed the lessons because before in the old update, the lessons like, cause you go into a lesson and it's like, this lesson is 5 hours long and you have to earn 5 stars or whatever, which means that you have to like keep on earning points in a 5 hours time limit. And if you happen to take longer than that, you'll fail the class. And that used to be really boring. It used to be like you just like click on things, but now it's like they have more little activities throughout the lesson and it's like more interesting at least to play. So that's good. I do like, it's funny. The way the game's set up is that you use energy for actions and it, like certain actions would be like, oh, gossip is like one thing of energy, but then like learn to cast a spell is like 4 things of energy or whatever. And, if you run out of energy, it's like, oh, buy more energy. And it's like, I would never fucking spend money on anything in this game. So
it's the same as like any mobile game. You either have to wait hours and hours and hours, or you just pay to play mechanics. It's quite dangerous because I accidentally spend like $200 because I have no self-discipline. So
what?
Don't do that. Don't spend your money on this app.
Oh my gosh, Rhea.
I know. I'm terrible.
Wild. Yeah, I haven't paid for a single thing in this game. I just wait it out, which is actually better because, like, I'm a busy gal, so I can, like, start something and be like, oh, this is an 8-hour long lesson. I'll just, like, do this, and then I'll, like, go to work and live my life and then come back at the end of my shift and be like, oh, I can just finish this lesson and I'm done. So, easy as.
Yeah. That's the proper way to play the game. One thing I really like about it is I really like the graphics. The game looks like the old PC games, which is a big, like, nostalgia hit for me.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that. I don't like the fashion choices or the hair choices. They're heinous. Like, I understand that the game's set in the 80s, but I want more 80s fashion, not this trash. Like I was looking through the options, and it's, like, some weird ragdoll sort of outfits. I'm like, what is this? Where are, like, the high-waisted jeans and cool jackets? that's the sort of stuff I want to be wearing.
Yeah, all the clothes are really ugly, and it won't let me have my hair as a crazy color. I'm only allowed to be, like, blonde, brunette, redhead, like the actual hair colors. I want blue and pink.
Yeah, basically I want to look like Tonks, which I haven't met yet, but I really want to. I think the teachers are really interesting. I like that McGonagall just likes and trusts us instantly. Another thing that makes me think that you're supposed to be playing this game as a Gryffindor, but maybe that's just my bias.
Yeah. Snape hates you and McGonagall loves you. That doesn't make sense.
Snape is such an asshole, and I take every opportunity I can to rag on him because he just hates me for no reason. Because you can choose, like, dialogue options, and so sometimes they'll usually be dialogue in such a way where it's, like, the right thing to say, the okay thing to say, and they're just plain out insulting someone. And so sometimes when it comes to talking to Snape, if he's just being a dick to me for no reason, I'll just be like, you know what? You do look like a house elf, you bitch. Eat me. Marula Snide. Tell us about Marula Snide, Maria.
Yeah, okay. So Marula's great. I just 100%, she's awesome.
I hate her.
She's the Draco Malfoy character. She's in Slytherin, which is cool because it means we're bunkmates because we're both in Slytherin. She hates you for absolutely no reason. It has something to do with the main plot of the game, which is you have an elder brother who has gone missing because he went crazy looking for something called the Curse Vaults, and you're also trying to find the Curse Vaults, and so is Marula. I don't really know what's going on because I haven't gotten that far in the game yet. Yeah, but she hates you because of something to do with your brother. Yeah, and she hates you because you're the best person in the year. You're the best at magic, and she wants to be the best at magic. I love her. I think she's the best character in the game. I 100% want to bang her. Definitely going to try and seduce her.
She looks like...
I don't know if that's an option the game is going to give me. I don't think it is. But I really hope so. Definitely just...
She's got fucking red eyes and, like, a hair that's just, like, so messy and disgusting. Yuck. And she, like, literally tries to kill you in the first, like, second that she meets you.
Yeah, the first thing she does is try to kill you. She's the best. Before I'd even started playing the game, it showed me the opening screen, which is like Dumbledore, Snape, Marula, Rowan and Penny. And I'm like, oh, check out that girl with that crazy eye makeup and like fucked bed hair. Yep, gonna get in her pants. She's great. But yeah, other characters. Rowan's your best friend. We've gone over how she's the worst person.
She's not the worst. She's just really annoying. Like, I just don't like her.
Oh, half the interactions you have with her is she runs up and she's like, I'm panicky and I feel upset. And then you have to spend like 2 hours trying to calm her down. And I'm like, I don't care if you're upset. Get away from me. It's not my problem.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more of a Penny sort of girl. Penny's real nice. She's real popular. She's really good at potions. She's just like cool and easygoing. Like, I want to bang Penny.
Penny's great. Penny is, her thing is like, she's the most popular girl at Hogwarts, which is frankly ridiculous because I don't care how great Penny is. She's an 11-year-old in a school full of teenagers. No 17-year-old is like, the most popular person I know is this fucking 11-year-old. But yeah, she's cute, she's funny, she knows everyone, she's good at potions. I like her because she's the only one of your friends so far that I've met who comes up to you not with a list of problems. Like, she's just like, hey, I'm fun and cool, want to hang out? I'm like, yes, please. And there's also the other main character that I've met so far is Ben, who is the Muggle-born Gryffindor boy, and his main character trait is cowardice. So he doesn't belong in Gryffindor because he's terrified of everything. He knows all of the hiding places. There's like this major plot line where he's hidden and you have to go looking for him. And I'm like, I don't want to look at this boy. Leave me alone. I hate him. I'm very bitter. See, this is why Penny and Marula are the best characters, because they are the two characters who don't come to you with constant whining. Rowan and Ben is just whining and solving their problems. They're not my friends. Get away.
Limpets. I will say one of my favorite things to do in the game is duel people.
Yep.
Because dueling's really fun because you can just throw rocks at people as a move, and it like takes away literally half their energy. They just like fall over.
Yeah. Number one trick dueling, fuck magic. Magic is useless. Don't use any spells. Just distract them until they are looking the other way and then chuck a rock at their head until they die. That's how I've won every duel.
Yeah. Two rocks and they're down. Don't have to cast a single spell. And then at the end of the duel, they're like, wow, you're so good at magic. I'm like, bitch, I was just throwing rocks at you.
Other advice for the game is that get free energy by tapping stuff on different levels. It renews every couple of hours, so that's good to give you a bit of a boost if you're running low.
Yeah. So on the Transfiguration level, you tap some books on a bench. On the Grounds level, you tap the stick and Fang comes running up and takes it away. It's great. On the Great Hall level, you tap one of the flaming columns next to the Great Hall doors. On the Dungeons level, you tap the House Elf. On the Charms room level, you tap the first portrait you see, which is blank, but then a lady appears laughing. And then on the Dumbledore's office level, you tap the second portrait you see, and then the two pumpkins get put on the portrait. So, hacks.
You just had that whole thing memorized. I was going to be like, one of them's a house elf, one of them's the dog, and the rest you have to find on your own because I haven't got them memorized. But you just knew them all.
Yeah, I've been playing this game a lot, Rhea, because I want to figure out the mystery.
Yeah, I am very interested. That's one thing that I'm really enjoying. I really want to know what's going on, and I'm loving investigating Hogwarts and interacting with people and trying to solve a mystery. It's fun. It's like I'm in the first couple of books. Okay, so we should probably move on from this game now because we've been talking about it for a while. Let's get into the proper episode.
Yes, so is Draco a werewolf? No.
I think he is. So the theory that Draco is a werewolf is, it's like one of those big theories in the Harry Potter fandom that's been passed around a lot and has even filtered out into the general public because it's such a popular headcanon. It started when the Half-Blood Prince came out, so like way back when the books were still being published.
Uh-huh.
The theory goes that in between the fifth and the sixth books, Voldemort sent Fenrir Greyback to bite Draco Malfoy and transform him into a werewolf as a punishment to Lucius Malfoy because Lucius Malfoy failed to retrieve the prophecy.
Right.
So what do you think of that?
Unlikely, because why would Voldemort want to soil the pure blood of the Malfoy family? Sure, Lucius ought to be punished, but he's already in Azkaban. Isn't that punishment enough?
No, absolutely not. Voldemort didn't send him to Azkaban. Well, that was the Ministry of Magic. That's not Voldemort's punishment.
Yeah. Yeah, but Voldemort has another punishment in the fact that he's setting Draco up to do the near impossible task of murdering Albus Dumbledore.
But I think he did both of those things. He set him up to kill Albus Dumbledore and also made him a werewolf.
But, like, why would he want to do that, though? What's the benefit of making Draco Malfoy a werewolf when he wants Draco Malfoy to kill Dumbledore at Hogwarts? Wouldn't that make it more difficult for him to complete his task?
Yeah, but he doesn't want Draco to complete his task. He's supposed to fail to give Voldemort an excuse to murder him. Anyway, I'm going to start with evidence against Draco being a Death Eater. Okay, so first of all, the first hint that we get that Draco might have become a Death Eater is when Harry, Ron, and Hermione follow him under the invisibility cloak to Borgin and Burke's and eavesdrop on a conversation that he has there. During that conversation, Draco pulls back his sleeves, shows Borgin something on his arm, and Borgin freaks out. He's terrified, and Draco's like, you better do what I say. And Harry assumes at the time that that's the Dark Mark, and he's showing Borgin, like, evidence that he's aligned with Voldemort. But we never actually see the Dark Mark, so that's not confirmed.
Mm-hmm. But we do see the Dark Mark in the movie.
Yeah, I don't care about the movie. I'm straight up ignoring the movie. This is just about the book. What?
That's clear evidence in the sixth movie. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I'm not going to reference the movie.
In the sixth movie, Draco pulls up his sleeve and has a dark mark on his forearm.
This theory was created before the movie came out. So to pretend the movie doesn't exist, this is a book-exclusive theory.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll just deny that clear and shining evidence.
Yes.
Which clearly negates your entire argument. Just because.
Yeah. That seems to be the theory. Right, how is that unreasonable?
It is unreasonable because, like, theories should only be strong enough to adapt to different circumstances. But this one is clearly broken apart by the fact that in the sixth movie,
the books are Draco has the movies are adaptations of the books. They take things that don't happen in the books and things that do happen in the books, and they change them. There's no reason why this theory couldn't be true in the book and they just decided to change it in the movie, possibly because it was never fully realized in the book. I'll go into that later.
Continue.
Okay, so more evidence against him being a Death Eater. So Harry jumps to that conclusion that he's a Death Eater, and then he becomes completely obsessed with that idea. And it, like, consumes him. He gets worse and worse as the year goes on. But all the way through, Hermione doesn't agree with him. Usually, when Hermione says something, she's right, unless she's angry. And when Ron says something, he's wrong, unless he's joking. When he's joking, he's, like, a fucking divination master. Ron knows everything when he's joking. But the point stands that Hermione is usually right, and she isn't in this situation.
Okay, but Hermione isn't always usually right. In sixth book, again, Hermione believes that the Half-Blood Prince is Eileen Princeton, right? Who is actually Snape's mother. She wasn't right there.
But she was kind of right. She was on the right track. It was Snape.
Being on the right track isn't the same as being right.
Okay.
Just because Harry is often wrong and Hermione is often right doesn't mean that Harry is always wrong and Hermione is always right. That's very flimsy evidence.
No, but I think it lends some authority to this because just in terms of basic storytelling, it seems weird that Harry just makes this big leap of logic and everyone is against him, but he just keeps being committed to it and he gets sort of crazy. Like, he's following Draco. He's spending hours and hours outside of the Room of Requirement trying to break in and prove his theory right. It doesn't make sense for Harry to make this big assumption and then it pays off that he was correct the whole time. Like, when you look at his behavior, he's acting really, really strange. He makes this big, crazy leap of logic about Draco based on very little evidence, and then he pursues it with such obsessiveness. He stalks Draco all over the castle. He eavesdrops on his conversations. He hides outside he spends hours and hours outside the Room of Requirement trying to break in. He neglects the tasks that Dumbledore has given him, searching for Horcruxes and interrogating Slughorn, in favor of this obsession with Draco. From a story writing perspective, a good payoff for that kind of story isn't, and it turns out he was right all along. A better sort of payoff is something like, it turns out he was on the right track, but his initial assumption was wrong. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would make more sense if the payoff was not that Draco was a Death Eater. The payoff was Draco was after Dumbledore, but it turns out he was never a Death Eater at all.
I know what you're hinting at here, and I agree with you, but I disagree with you as well. Because the whole point of Harry stalking Draco wasn't just that, oh, I know he's a Death Eater. It was also Draco's up to something. So the whole book with him and his investigations and his eavesdropping was him trying to find out what Draco was up to. And the payoff of that was he didn't get there in time. He didn't figure out in time what Draco was up to. And so that was devastating because obviously that led to Dumbledore's death. Also, it is a massive payoff to be you were right all along, because Harry was the only person that believed Draco was a Death Eater. He tried telling it to Hermione, Ron, Lupin, Arthur, like everyone that he could speak to, and about this issue, of course, and even Dumbledore, and none of them believed him. So it is a payoff to say, look, I was right all along. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, there's another similar plot line in the sixth Harry Potter book in which Harry is trying to, is sort of has this book, right? The Half-Blood Prince's book. And Hermione is always trying to figure out who the Half-Blood Prince is. And Harry has a bit of like curiosity about it as well, but not really anything more than a fantasy of, oh, maybe it could be my dad, or maybe it was this cool guy that I wish I'd met. And so that is the payoff of that is that, wow, it turns out to be Snape, but it turns out that this figure that I've been idolizing was actually dangerous and a betrayer. So that is a sort of subversion. And it goes back to what you were harking at, where it's like, oh, he was convinced of this one thing the whole time, but then it turned out he was wrong. So that plot already exists in the Half-Blood Prince. It's the Half-Blood Prince plot.
All right. The main plot. Okay. My final piece of evidence that Draco is not a Death Eater has to do with the barrier around the tower. So the tower where Draco confronts Dumbledore and attempts to murder him, but that goes wrong. So there's a kind of force field or magical barrier would be a better way to describe it. Not force field. There is a magical barrier protecting the door of that tower, which stops anybody who isn't branded with a dark mark from being able to get inside. The key thing there is that barrier goes up immediately after Draco has gone up the tower, and it comes down immediately before Draco leaves, which is interesting because if Draco is branded with the dark mark, why do that? Mm-hmm. Why not just leave the barrier there and, like, why clear the way behind him?
Okay, well, the reason why it went up after Draco went up there was pure coincidence. That was because he was being joined by his Death Eater friends who thought to put that precaution. No, it wasn't the Death Eaters put that there. It was the Death Eaters who put that there. Sorry. That was after his Death Eater friends went up there. Right, so that's fine. And then coming back down, Fenrir Greyback was with them. Fenrir Greyback doesn't have a dark mark, so they had to get rid of it in order for Fenrir Greyback to come through.
Oh, damn. I didn't remember that. Okay. Damn it. I don't like how well you're arguing.
Yeah, exactly. They're not just all going to walk through and Fenrir's like bumping against the barrier like, please. And they're like, oh, fuck off, Fenrir. And they just walk off.
That is something they would do, though. Fuck you. I don't like how well you're arguing against me. It doesn't bode well. Okay, so I want to talk a bit more about Voldemort's reasons for marking Draco. We've already gone into it. In the book, it's like, okay, he gave him the dark mark to punish Lucius and to set Draco up with this impossible task, which he would fail and then Voldemort could murder him and appear justified in front of his followers. Because he can't just murder Draco for no reason because, you know, he's the son and heir of an important family, blah, blah, blah. He's got to keep up his pretenses. I just think that that's not enough of a punishment for Lucius, because Lucius, he didn't only cost Voldemort the prophecy, which, by the way, Voldemort believes is his one ticket to figuring out how to defeat Harry. He's also responsible for one of Voldemort's Horcruxes being destroyed. I think it's shocking that Lucius is even alive, and I think the only reason he is alive is because he has more, like, power, status, money than the other Death Eaters. And Voldemort wants to use his mansion as a hideout and stuff like that. But he needs to be punished still.
Yes. Well, if you remember, Lucius's punishment doesn't stop after sixth book. In seventh book, Voldemort shacks up in Malfoy Manor. Voldemort tortures and antagonizes the Malfoys consistently. He takes Lucius's wand and basically breaks it in his duel with Harry. In the sky. He belittles Draco and threatens Narcissa a lot. So it's not as if Lucius gets off easy at all.
No. But this is all evidence supporting me. Voldemort just keeps hassling Lucius. Like, he's not willing to just let things go. So it seems like his initial punishment should be pretty damn severe as well. If Voldemort's just like, well, you're basically dead to me now. I'm just going to keep using you and messing with you. And we also know that Voldemort has a practice of using Fenrir Greyback to attack the children of people who have displeased him. That whole plotline is actually introduced in this book at Christmas time, I believe, where Lucius is discussing with Harry how he was bitten.
Lupin.
That seems like it's set up for like a reveal at the end, but it doesn't quite go anywhere because at the end Fenrir just attacks Bill and Bill isn't transformed into a werewolf.
Yeah, well, that doesn't mean that the plot is necessarily about Draco.
No, but it could be. Like, I think that would be a really awful, awful punishment for Lucius. Like, his only son and heir is now no longer a pureblood. By the reasoning of people like Voldemort and Lucius, he's not a real wizard anymore, and he's barely even a person.
Right. Can I just interject here with some solid evidence for my argument, though? So, if you remember, at the beginning of the sixth book, there's a scene where Bellatrix and Narcissa go and visit Snape. Narcissa's basically begging Snape to help her son and to protect him and to do the deed should Draco not be able to do it. Now, throughout this scene, why wouldn't have Narcissa said something along the lines of, look, my son needs your help in more than one way. He needs Wolfsbane potion and he needs you to take care, like he needs you to look out for him because now he's a werewolf. None of her language seemed to indicate that her son had just been turned into a werewolf at all. And neither did Bellatrix's.
Yeah, I think it's because at that point they don't know what's going to happen. At that point, Draco hasn't been bitten. So, like, first of all, none of the lines specifically say Draco's going to become a Death Eater. So you can read that scene with the idea that the werewolf thing is true and it still makes sense. But if you want to be better and more in character. Okay, so assume that Voldemort has come to Narcissa and Draco and said something along the lines of, I'm going to bestow upon Draco a great gift and I'm going to give him a chance to prove himself. Something really vague like that. And they've assumed that he means, well, he's going to mark him, he's going to make him a Death Eater, and he's going to give him the task to kill Dumbledore. Or maybe that was outlined for them. So Narcissa starts freaking out because she's like, well, my son's going to be marked and he's going to fail and he's going to die and blah, blah, blah. So she runs off to get Snape's help and Bellatrix follows her. And this is actually, if you look at the sort of language Bellatrix uses, she's saying things like, Draco is excited. He wants this chance to prove himself. He is going to be honored. It's all like future sort of tense, like implying something's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. So I think they, like Voldemort as an extra fucking cruel thing because he's an asshole, set them up to believe that Draco going to be honored and inducted into the Death Eaters and then turned around and had Fenrir bite him.
Okay.
That is my opinion.
Okay. I don't believe that, but that's your opinion, I guess. Yeah. Can I also point to a different scene? In The Deathly Hallows, Dumbledore, in a flashback, when Harry's sifting through Snape's memories, Dumbledore is talking about how Snape has to protect the poor boy, indicating Draco, and obviously do the deed, killing him, where Snape has to kill Dumbledore. In this conversation, again, it doesn't come up. Yeah, there's no hints at all to indicate that Draco was a werewolf. There's also nothing that Dumbledore says along the lines of, oh, I'll open up the Whomping Willow again so that he can transform there, or anything along those lines.
Okay. When was that exactly?
Deathly Hallows. In the flashback when we're looking through the prince's memories, and Snape is talking about how, oh, I've made the unbreakable vow and they've asked me to kill you if Draco can't do it.
But couldn't that have happened, like, immediately after his conversation with Narcissa and Bellatrix?
It was during school, though. It was at the school.
Just because they were physically at the school doesn't mean it was during the school holidays. From memory, wasn't that scene when Dumbledore had hurt his arm and Snape was helping him, which happened during the school holidays? Okay. So now I'm going to start with my evidence for being a werewolf because I haven't actually gotten into my evidence for yet. At Borgin and Burks, Draco shows Borgin the, what I'm saying is the bite mark. I'm saying that Fenrir bit Draco on the arm, like where the dark mark was supposed to go.
All right, fine.
As like even worse, like you can never be marked, like you'll never be one of the Death Eaters. You're bitten, you're a werewolf now. Draco shows Borgin the bite and he name drops Fenrir Greyback. Like he says specifically, you know Fenrir Greyback, right? He's a close personal friend. Wouldn't it be awful if I had to send him over here to talk to you? That is just a threat, obviously, but it sort of implies that, like, Draco and Fenrir are quite close. Like, maybe Draco's part of his pack now, because Fenrir has a pack of crazy werewolf, like, vicious animals. That would explain why Borgin is so terrified of Draco.
The Death Eaters constantly... The Death Eaters, like, make threats against people's families all the time using the Fenrir the Greyback, because, like, what's worse than being killed by Death Eaters? Having your children turn into werewolves, apparently. So I don't think that's evidence.
Yeah. That's why we can't vaccinate them.
Yeah. I was about to say there's an analogy there. But I wouldn't call that evidence.
Why not? That's great evidence. That's one way to interpret the scene, which greatly supports my argument.
It's one way to interpret the scene, but it's not the only way to interpret the scene. Draco could just simply be showing Borgin his dark mark. Borgin is threatened by this because it's like, oh, shit, this isn't just some petulant child. This is actually a Death Eater who has connections to Voldemort, who has returned, by the way. And so if he's threatening me with a werewolf fight, then I'm going to take that seriously.
If he's threatening with a werewolf fight?
Yeah, because he's saying that Fenrir Greyback is a close personal friend. And by the way, that's the sort of shit that elitist people say all the time. If they've met, like, the president once, it's like, oh, yes, they're a close personal friend.
Mm. That is the kind of shit that Draco specifically says all the time. He does it the year before when he's like, oh, yeah, the owl examiners, I know them all. It's like, no, you don't. It's just a lie. Fast forward to On the Hogwarts Express. There's that scene where Harry turns himself invisible and follows Theodore Knott back to his train compartment so he can overhear what Draco's saying. Draco is talking about how he doesn't need to be at school anymore. He's ready to move on to bigger and better things. If he's a Death Eater, that doesn't quite make sense because he's still underage and he should still be studying magic, even if it's dark magic that he wants to learn. But it does make sense if he's, like, leaning into the werewolf side of himself, like if he's trying to accept it. Like, maybe Greyback's gotten into his head and he's like, you don't need magic anymore. You don't have to be a wizard. You can get everything you want just by embracing your wolf side. And at this point, Draco is still loyal to Voldemort, so he probably thinks that, like, I can serve the Dark Lord really well if I'm, like, some kind of magical beast. This is before he gets, like, a big dose of reality later on.
I don't think so. I think when he says, it's time for me to move on to bigger and greater things, look at the perspective of the sixth book. There are attacks against muggles from Death Eaters happening on the reg. Like, Voldemort's on the move and so are his armies. They're gathering, they're getting giants, they're getting vampires. Maybe that's what Draco's thinking. It's like, school's a waste of time. The war's starting. I want to be training with my family and with actual Death Eaters that will teach me curses that are better than what I could learn from at Hogwarts. Because at Hogwarts, they just learn defense against dark arts, not the actual dark arts. So that's what Draco means when he says, I want to move on to bigger and better things. He wants to be part of the war effort. He wants to be part of Voldemort's rise.
Hmm. Maybe he wants to be a werewolf. Check out my incredible debate skills, Vivi.
Yeah, I love this. This is always the case in debate episodes. I'll come up with all these very clear arguments, and then you'll just be like, but what about this? And you're just reiterating what you've already said.
That is classic. That is so me. I just let you make your argument, and then I'm like, but what if? And I say some snide, stupid bullshit. And act like it's a real argument. Classic elder sibling. So throughout the book, Draco is described as becoming increasingly sickly. Like, he's pale, he's tired. This is supposedly from stress, but, like, it could also be an indication of, like, regular transformations. It sounds a lot like how Lupin is described.
Uh-uh.
And did you just say uh-uh? Uh-uh, no.
Uh-uh. Lupin is only described as being sickly and, like, exhausted around the phase of a full moon. The rest of the time, he just looks shabby, but that's because of his clothing. Draco is sickly and stressed all the time. There's not a point throughout this book in which, like, Harry sees him and thinks that he looks healthy or fine. He's always described as, like, the shadow-eyed Draco or, like, the gaunt-faced Draco. So being sickly all the time isn't an indication of werewolfness.
Well, it's probably affecting him as a lot worse because he's not used to it. Lupin's had, like, what, decades to get used to his transformations and figure out how to handle them. Draco's, like, getting the full brunt of it, and he hasn't figured out how to cope yet. Like, he's only just newly bitten.
From what we know about werewolves so far in the series, we just haven't seen that to be true. Werewolves are fine, but in between transformations, it's only around the phase of the moon that they actually get sickly and nervous and on edge and... Yes.
Well, I just think that, like, when you are just... When you've just been bitten and you're still getting used to these transformations, you're still figuring out how to handle it, it's going to take a harsher toll on you, like, physically, mentally, psychologically. I think that's a really good explanation for the way Draco looks and behaves, in addition to the general stress that he's under because of having to kill Dumbledore.
Yeah. You know what's a better explanation for why he's always sickly and stressed? Just the general stress of having to kill Dumbledore, the fact that his father's in prison, the fact that he's failing his school exams, the fact that he's under pressure from Snape, the fact that he's going to be killed if he doesn't succeed, the fact that his mother's terrified for him, the fact that his aunt has been broken out of prison, and she's a bit of a weird presence in his life. Yeah, the fact that reality is about to come crashing down on him, he's isolating himself from his friends because they don't understand what he's going through. But that's enough reason to be looking sick and stressed.
I also think that he isn't taking Wolfsbane potion. Like, I think that's part of the reason why it's worse with him than it is with Lupin.
Of course he isn't taking it. He's not a werewolf.
No, he is a werewolf. And he's not taking Wolfsbane potion, and he's just transforming in the Room of Requirement. Because we know that he has access to the Room of Requirement, and we know that the room can do anything you need it to do. So it would be a perfectly safe place for him to transform. Possibly he hasn't told Snape what's going on, and... Or the other possibility is that he doesn't want to take the potion because Slughorn is the potion's master now, and it would be highly suspicious if such large quantities of ingredients were going missing as to explain the quantity of Wolfsbane potion that he would need to be taking regularly. Okay, fast forward to book 7. We're done with book 6 now. I think it's the first scene right at the beginning. When Voldemort finds out that Lupin and Tonks are having a baby, he says to Draco, maybe you can babysit the cubs. That's a really weird line. If the implication is just that, like, Draco is related to Tonks. But if he's a werewolf, that is a fucking cutting barb. Like, I, Voldemort, did this awful thing to you, and now you're no better than these animals that we're going to kill. Like, what a massive middle finger to the entire Malfoy family. Hey, Draco, maybe you can babysit the cubs. Fuck you.
I will admit that is a sick burn. However, it doesn't necessarily tell us that Draco is in fact a werewolf. It could just be a dig at the fact that the Malfoy family is terrified. Draco's clearly terrified at that meeting. Draco's the only, like, child there. I mean, yes, he's 17, but he's a child. And children usually babysit other children. So that's the implication there. Voldemort just wants to put Draco at the center of attention and frighten him a little bit.
But it's still a strange line, because to bring Draco to the center of attention, you could just be like, Draco, maybe we'll give you the honor of slaughtering the cubs. That seems like that's what you would do, obviously. If you had Lupin and Tonk's children, you would just kill them. You wouldn't keep them alive. But if the implication is, well, you're a werewolf and they will be werewolf babies, it's like, add them to your pack. That makes sense.
Do any of the Malfoys say something before Voldemort says that line? So, like, what's the interaction?
Okay, so I'll walk you through the whole conversation. Voldemort, I'm talking about your niece Bellatrix and yours, Lucius Narcissa. She just married the werewolf Remus Lupin. You must be so proud. Bellatrix, she's no niece of ours, my lord. We, Narcissa and I, have never set eyes on our sister since she married the Mudblood. This brat has nothing to do with either of us, nor any beast she marries. Voldemort, what say you, Draco? Will you babysit the cubs? Many of our oldest family trees become a little diseased over time. You must prune yours, must you not? Cut away those parts that threaten the health of the rest.
Yeah. So the Malfoys were brought into that conversation. It wasn't just Voldemort randomly putting Draco at the center of attention.
Babysitting the cubs. Like, to say that to another Death Eater about, like, creatures they think are unworthy of basic life is so strange. But if you're saying that to another werewolf... Like, you know, basically, we'll come in and we'll kill the parents, because the parents are blood traitors and vermin, but maybe you can babysit the cubs. We'll take their children, and we'll raise them as part of our regime of monsters. Like, that's the sort of logic that Voldemort would have. if Draco is just another Death Eater, babysit the cubs doesn't make any sense.
No, I mean, you said that why would Voldemort just bring Draco into this and make that jab about the cubs unless he was saying that Draco was a werewolf and the cubs will be children werewolves, and so you can add them to the pack. But no, Bellatrix has established that she and Narcissa were totally against this, the marriage between Lupin and Tonks, and were against their cousin. And Voldemort was making a bit of a veiled threat to both of them by bringing Draco into it. It's like, oh, what do you think, Draco? What are you going to say? And then Bellatrix steps in. Is it Bellatrix or Narcissa who says that we need to prune the family tree? Bellatrix would say that. So, yeah.
That's Voldemort. Voldemort was still saying that. It was still him talking.
Okay. Right. There you go. I don't think this is meant to be a joke at Draco's expense. I think this is meant to be a joke at Remus and Tonks' expense. The joke is like, haha, she's married a werewolf, so she's going to have hybrid cub babies. And he's just sort of pushing that onto Draco because he knows that Voldemort knows that when he's being joking, Draco's like frightened because he doesn't know how to respond. He doesn't know whether he should laugh or agree or what. So it's just funny to watch him squirm a little bit.
Okay, look, I'm willing to accept that. It's strange that this one line is the hill we've both decided that we want to die on. No, I'm right. Everything else we're just like, yeah, here's the evidence, here's the counter-argument, whatever. But this one line, like, let me look up the fucking dialogue. We're going to get into this. Look, listeners, you decide. What do you think? Werewolf, not werewolf. Okay, so Draco being a werewolf makes it easier to understand why at the end of the books the Malfoys are willing to switch sides. Because we know that Narcissa will do anything to protect Draco, and it makes sense for them to turn on Voldemort if he's no longer one of the pure-blood elite that can be expected to have this sort of privileged existence in Voldemort's new regime. If Draco is going to be basically considered like scum and a beast, then it makes sense that they should swap sides as soon as possible.
I don't think that that's the reason that they decided to switch sides. I think the reason they decided to switch sides is because they were battle-weary, terrified of what Voldemort's new world had become. That the fact that Voldemort just obviously didn't give a shit about the Malfoy family anymore. Their prestige had gone. And the fact that the battle had gotten so much that so many people had died and Narcissa was just terrified for the welfare of her son and husband. I think that those are the reasons why they decided to flee and change sides in the last battle. Not the fact that, oh, if the new world order does come into place, Draco will be treated as lesser than. No, they were terrified for their lives.
Yeah. All of those things you're saying are true. It just adds an extra dimension to it if you consider the possibility that Draco was also a werewolf. Like, it just provides more motivation.
Maybe so, but it's just not, there's no evidence. Like, all the evidence you've been providing to me that Draco's a werewolf could just be evidence of Draco is a Death Eater. Like, and a human boy. He's a real boy! You haven't convinced me.
Okay, I've got two more things.
Hit me.
But this is my movie evidence, so it's not as good. Because
so now the movies are coming into play.
Yeah, not the sixth movie.
Bullshit. All right. All right. Okay. Well, if the movies are coming into play now, I have some things to say about the movies as well. Would that go to my argument?
I'll let you go first because my evidence is flimsy, so you can make your movie arguments.
Right. In the Battle of Hogwarts, in Book 7 and Movie 8, Fenrir Greyback attacks Lavender Brown in werewolf form. Tonks is anxious to find Remus, perhaps not just because he is her husband, but because he is a werewolf, and if he hasn't been potioned, the people around him might be in danger. There is no indication that Fenrir can willingly change into his wolf form. This goes against the established law of the universe anyway. Lupin's corpse was found as a human, yes. However, perhaps when a werewolf is killed, they revert back to human form. All of this evidence to me indicates that the Battle of Hogwarts occurred on the night of a full moon. Draco Malfoy was running around during the Battle of Hogwarts in the Room of Acquirement and etc. as a human boy. Not a werewolf.
As a human boy. I thought that was a plot hole in the books. Not specifically with the Draco thing. Let's just ignore Draco for the moment. I thought that was actually like a recognized plot hole, but because it doesn't make sense for Fenrir to be running around in wolf form when Lupin isn't. Because Don't we see Lopin earlier on in that chapter? He's still human.
I don't know if we see him early in the chapter. I know in the movies we see him as a human because he's standing there with Tonks and they've got their arms outstretched. He says that line to Kingsley.
Yeah, I thought this was just like a recognized plot hole. Like, so either Lupin has done something to stay in human form, which as we know is impossible, or I think it's more likely that Fenrir wasn't in wolf form and he was running around and just attacking people. And he only seemed like a wolf because of how vicious he is normally. Like, I'm just trying to remember if it specifically says in the book, like, Fenrir, in his wolf form, attacks Lavender. Because I think it just says that, like, Fenrir Greyback charges past and attacks Lavender and bites her. And you're like, oh, fuck. But then it's okay because he did that exact same thing to Bill Weasley.
Harry says that he saw a flash of grey. And then Fenrir Greyback is on top of Lavender, biting at her. So the assumption from me was that Fenrir Greyback was a grey wolf.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's just his normal self and he has grey hair or something.
Another thing, which is, I have so many plot holes. The movie is plot hole city. Like, especially, like, the Prisoner of Azkaban gave us so much, but it also gave us so many plot holes and changed the cinematic universe so drastically. So in Prisoner of Azkaban, it states that there are other ways to become a werewolf despite being bitten. But Pottermore says that no, the only way to become a werewolf is to be bitten by one at a full moon. Prisoner of Azkaban says that werewolves can transform at will or when hearing the howl of another werewolf, but the book Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them negates this. Only the full moon can transform a man into a werewolf. And the Prisoner of Azkaban also claims that a werewolf's soul is damned and cannot move on from the mortal plane after death. That's in the movie. However, we know that in the seventh book and in the seventh movie, Lupin appears to Harry through the Resurrection Stone as a ghost. We're not sure if that is actually an actual ghost, but we know that there's a hint there that Lupin has moved on to the afterlife with Tonks. So that's just a bit of a rant about plot holes.
Yeah. This is why, listeners, if you go all the way back to episode 2, is the Cursed Child canon, Gem and I have this big discussion where we go through all of the different artifacts of the Harry Potter universe and decide how canon we consider them. You consider books and movies equally canon. I do not. The books are canon. The movies are adaptations.
No, I don't. I don't. I've never said that.
Yes, it is. That's what you said in that episode.
No, I didn't. I said that the books are canon. The seven original texts are canon. And then the movies are canon unless they directly negate what is stated in the series, in the series of books.
Right, that's true. That's what you said.
Unless they directly negate or defile what is said in the original text, to quote myself posthumously. Thank you very much.
Posthumously?
You're hearing me from beyond the grave, listeners.
I'll be dead by the time we release this. Back to judging ghosts after choking on a grave. Okay, so I just wanted to reference two things from the movies which sort of play into this theory, but I won't say they're direct evidence because I don't consider the movies canon. So in the eighth movie, or seven part two, that weird hug scene with Draco and Voldemort. That's so weird. If you watch that scene again, the idea in your head that Voldemort no longer thinks of Draco as a person but thinks of him like a dog, it fits. He treats him like a pet. I think the actual line is, "Come, Draco." Then Draco walks over into him and he gives him like a weird pat hug thing. And he's like, "Now run along to your family." It fits. If Voldemort's like, this person is not a human, he's a dog now.
I don't accept that as evidence because that is the weirdest thing in the entire cinematic Harry Potter experience. And I don't think there's any explanation behind that besides what. So I would accept that as evidence that Draco is in fact a werewolf. You could still see that as Draco is a Death Eater and a human boy, and Voldemort is just welcoming the first Death Eater onto his side.
And he's just very bad at being welcoming because he doesn't know how humans interact.
Exactly. He doesn't know how to do things properly with emotional anything. So you can believe that he's just being welcoming. It's just an awful scene to watch it. I think, I think when I actually saw that in cinemas for the first time, I couldn't take it seriously. I actually did laugh. I was like, what?
No, I remember it being chilling. I was terrified. The other piece of movie evidence that I have is, I've referenced this before in our Wolfstar episode, something happens, and nobody knows what it is. Something happens in the third movie, which J.K. Rowling has said, this actually foreshadows something which was going to happen later in the series. So I think books 5, 6, and 7, there's something in those books which is foreshadowed in the third movie. And nobody knows what it is because she's never explained herself. This could be referring to the moment in Defense Against the Dark Arts class where Draco mimics a werewolf and howls. That could be foreshadowing of him being a werewolf. Yep, that's all.
Sure, it could be referring to that moment. It could be referring to that moment, or it could be referring to literally any other moment in the movie. Answer me this. If Draco Malfoy was a werewolf, was turned into a werewolf, why didn't J.K. Rowling ever write that into the 6th or 7th book at all?
Okay. My theory there is that it was supposed to be a big plot line in book 6. So there was supposed to be a big reveal at the end, but it was cut from the end because there was already the big reveal of Snape is the Half-Blood Prince and, of course, Dumbledore's death. So she didn't want to detract from those emotional moments by bringing in this werewolf plotline. So she moved it into book 7, but then it was also moved out of book 7 because it's just basically not relevant in what is happening in the story, which is, you know, the hunt for the Hallows and Harry's journey and Harry's death, resurrection stuff at the end, the Battle of Hogwarts at the end. She's like, there's just nowhere to really explore this, so it ended up getting cut from the series. That's the way I explain it.
It's just not relevant to Harry's journey.
Draco's lycanthropy isn't relevant to Harry's journey.
Where's the werewolf representation? Do you know how many people in the world are dogs? You know, you want to know my hot take on this theory that Draco's a werewolf? Here's my theory about Draco being a werewolf. My theory is that Draco Malfoy is the unofficial fandom bad boy who is like an absolute fan fiction trope. And so the idea that he is a werewolf is very exciting and appealing because of the whole supernatural love interest and Twilight craze that was happening around the time that the fandom was reading the 6th book and the 7th book. So that's why the whole Draco Malfoy is a werewolf thing really took off.
What you're talking about is actually a recognized phenomenon in the fandom. It's called Fanon Draco or Leather Pants Draco. But yeah, the idea that he's the fandom bad boy, Leather Pants Draco, is a big deal. Mm. I don't think it entirely negates the theory that he's a werewolf, though.
I think it loses a lot of the impetus behind it because it's people want Draco Malfoy to be a werewolf because they want to like excuse a lot of the behavior that he does, first of all, and they want to be sympathetic towards him and they want him to be more attractive and appealing. And at the time, werewolves were the hot shit.
That's true. Look, I'm willing to agree with all of that. I think that's all very accurate. What's interesting to me is that you didn't bring up the number one argument against Draco being a werewolf, which is that on Twitter in 2015, JK confirmed that he is not a werewolf.
Oh, yeah, I do have that written down. I just forgot to say it. Yeah, JK Rowling herself has confirmed that Draco Malfoy is not a werewolf.
Yeah, look, I've said this in the past and I'll say it again. I don't care what JK says. Her opinion means nothing to me.
We often demand her clarifications and opinions on this podcast, but I reckon if we actually ever did get them, which is impossible, we just wouldn't ignore them anyway.
I tweeted her about our last episode, the Owls episode, asking for clarification. But I know 100%, if she ever did reply, I'd just be like, this doesn't matter. Too bad. If you wanted it to be real, you should have written it in books.
She'd probably just say, like, oh, it's the inherent magic of the owls. And be like, no, give me, I want semantics. I need specific, not just magic.
Okay, so I've said everything I have to say about Draco being a werewolf. In conclusion, I think it's a really interesting theory. I really like how it explains certain things. I think the evidence for it is pretty good, like when you consider it all together and don't tear it down piece by piece like Jem has been. Yeah, so I think it's a really great theory. It's really solid. Ultimately, I don't believe that Draco's a werewolf. I think it's better explained by him being a Death Eater, as you've pointed out throughout your argument.
I think it's, I can agree with you there. Like, I think it's an entertaining theory. Like, I read through the theory, of course, before I, for my research for this episode, so I know what I was coming up against. And when you do see all the evidence like that piled together, it can be convincing, of course, unless you have seen the sixth movie. This is before the sixth movie came out. But I don't like it as a theory in terms of it. I think it depreciates from Draco's character arc. I think if we were to say, oh, Draco is a werewolf, and that's why he's acting so poorly and that why we should have sympathy for him, I think it detracts from the fact that Draco was a bad person. He made a lot of mistakes. He was forced to do things he didn't want to do. And he was still a shitty person by the end of the book. So I wouldn't say that he was a hero at all. But, like, it's interesting to see how he developed and matured and really had reality crushed down upon him. And so it's interesting to imagine his character going through all that rather than just explaining away a lot of his behaviors with, oh, he was suffering because he was a werewolf and this was unfair. And also I think, especially after watching the sixth movie and seeing Tom Felton's portrayal of Draco Malfoy as he went throughout the year and was under all that stress and doing all the experiments, I think it's quite detracting to say that, oh, he was a werewolf. Like, because that was just a really good portrayal of a character. I think in that movie, he did the best acting. So, yeah.
I never interpreted as being a werewolf is somehow an excuse for Draco's actions. I more thought, like, it's kind of a punishment. Well, it is literally a punishment for Lucius, but it's kind of a punishment for Draco for his, like...
like a comeuppance.
Yeah, a comeuppance, for his bigotry. It's like, you've always thought you're better than others, and now you are what Wizarding Society terms to be the lowest of the low. So take this big dose of empathy, and now you have to fucking live with what you've become. I think it's a good arc for him to be like, huh, suck it, and now you have to decide what you're going to do. Are you going to be a part of Voldemort's world, or are you going to turn against him? Yeah, that's why I like the theory. But it doesn't quite play out that way in the books, so I don't think it's real.
Yeah, I don't believe it's real. It's just entertaining to think about.
Which is what we do here on this show.
Okay, well, I've been Jem, your willing to tear down every argument that's presented before her host.
And I've been Rhea, you're willing to believe anything about anything as long as it's referring to a hot teenage boy host.
Thanks for listening to Podcast 9¾. This show is written and edited by Rhea and Jem. You can send us an email at 9¾podcast@gmail.com, find us on Tumblr at podcast9¾.tumblr.com, or talk to us separately on Twitter. Rhea is at SmashMouthRhea, and me, Jem, is at Jem_justjem. Please feel free to send theories or ask us questions and bombard us with so many messages that we go mad and run away to a hut on a rock in the middle of the sea just to avoid them. Our logo art is by Winged Corgi. Find more of her art at wingedcorgi.tumblr.com. This week's intro music was Malfoy's Mission by Nicholas Hooper, and our outro music was Hedwig's Theme by John Williams. We'll hear from us again in 2 weeks' time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.